We gather tonight, this morning, to enter into the 18th chapter, the evolutionary process, ascent and integration. The chapter was originally published in the Aria with a different title, The Ascent and Its Downward Eye. In 15th November 1917. And here he has a set of citations from Vedic sources, Rig Veda and Yajur Veda. He writes in English translation, as he mounts from peak to peak, Yat sanaha sanum aruhad. Indra makes him conscious of that goal of his movement. Tat indro artam cetati. So here we have the idea of an ascent from peak to peak, in this sense, guided by the divine presence of Indra, who is not simply the king of the gods, but represents the power of the divine mind, the mind as it reaches towards the point of infinity. There is a consciousness beyond Indra, but Indra is the lord of what he surveys beneath his own station, and he draws upward moving folks to his own place. As you are drawn from peak to peak, you become aware. You begin to enter in to the kind of vast consciousness that Indra possesses. The next, if that was from the first mandala, the next is from the third mandala, which is the book of Vishvamitra, and it says, a son of the two mothers, Dvimata, he, and the he here is Agni, the divine fire. Two mothers, the mother of the infinite above, the mother of the earth, so he stands between. From above, he is the son of solar power. He is the son of the sun, born from that, cognate with the solar truth, the truth consciousness. Here too, he kindles a truth based upon earth and mediates between the above and the below. He is that point of consciousness whereby the experiences on this plane are offered upward intentionally, consciously, to gain communion, to reach common status with the powers above. Since he is from that divine supramental consciousness above, the sun, he naturally inclines us to achieve that as we are transported with him in our conscious offerings. So let's start again. A son of the two mothers, he attains to kingship in his discoveries of knowledge, vidateshu. He moves, charati, on the summit. He dwells, kshetti, in his high foundation. So this constant movement and then a stabilizing, a settling in, a new level has been attained and becomes the customary poise. The third citation is from the Yajur Veda. And while it's from the Yajur, it's from the Shukla Yajur, it quotes from the Atharva Veda, the fourth book of the Atharva Veda, I think it's hymn 14, 3, 4, and 5. It says, I have arisen from earth, from prithvi, to the mid-world, antariksham. I have risen from the mid-world to heaven, naka. From the level of the firmament of heaven, I have gone to the sun world, swar, the light, jyoti. So here is the very picture of the ascending consciousness as it strides from plane to plane, even in an evolutionary process. From earth to the mid-world, dominated by the life force. From there to heaven, the world of the mind. From the level of mind, he rises to the sun world, to the world of the supermind. And Sri Aurobindo describes this in his footnote, the four planes of matter, life, pure mind, and supermind. So an idea that is articulated in the earliest poetic utterances of Indian mystic philosophy. Let's start the chapter. It is now possible and necessary, since we have formed a sufficiently clear idea of the significance of the evolutionary manifestation in Earth nature, and the final turn it is taking or destined to take, to direct a more understanding regard on the principles of the process by which it has arrived at its present level, and by which, presumably, with whatever modifications, its final development, its passage from our still dominant mental ignorance to a supramental consciousness and an integral knowledge will be governed and made effective. For we find that cosmic nature is constant in its general law of action, since that depends on a truth of things which is invariable in principle, although in detail of application, abundantly variable. At the outset, we can easily see that since this is an evolution out of a material inconscience into spiritual consciousness, an evolutionary self-building of spirit on a base of matter, there must be in the process a development of a triple character. An evolution of forms of matter, more and more subtly and intricately organized, so as to admit the action of a growing, a more and more complex and subtle and capable organization of consciousness, is the indispensable physical foundation. An upward evolutionary progress of the consciousness itself, from grade to higher grade and ascent, is the evident spiral line or emerging curve that on this foundation the evolution must describe. A taking up of what has already been evolved into each higher grade as it is reached, and a transformation more or less complete so as to admit of a total changed working of the whole being and nature, an integration must be also part of the process if the evolution is to be effective. So the ideas dominate right from the start of this paragraph of a passage from ignorance into a greater knowledge, that there must be, from the beginning, a truth in things embedded in nature that can emerge and range upwards in its development. that we are given this base of matter and must, as we grow, incorporate higher and higher levels of energy and consciousness into that form, into that basis, so that it can become stabilized, so that it can be ultimately integrated and transformed. Now, this is how the paragraph begins here. Let me read the first sentence to you from the aria as he structured it there. It's also a great beginning. The evolution of the human race only assumes its true place and just meaning and is only intelligible, whether in its principle or the great lines of its plan, if we regard it not in itself, but in its relation to the universe. Another point worth making, that always Sri Aurobindo is working in solidarity with the earth, trying to use this place as the conscious bridge where we marry what is below us with what is above us, so that we bring to perfection here the stability of matter's form, informed with the power and self-lit resonance of the Supreme. All must meet here, here and now, Ihaiva. So, the end of this triple process must be a radical change of the action of the ignorance into an action of knowledge, of our basis of inconscience into a basis of complete consciousness, a completeness which exists at present only as in what is to us the superconscience. Because it is above our line of awareness, it is superconscient to us. The ignorance lies below, ultimately, in an inconscience, a kind of swoon. It is also a signature, veiled and dimmed, of what is a superconscient intention. Even in the inconscience is this power to evolve back to reclaim its origin above. Each ascent will bring with it a partial change and modification of the old nature, taken up and subjected to a new fundamental principle. The inconscience will be turned into a partial consciousness, an ignorance seeking for more and more knowledge and mastery. But at some point, there must be an ascent which substitutes the principle of knowledge of a fundamental true consciousness, the consciousness of the spirit, for the inconscience and ignorance. An evolution in the inconscience is the beginning. An evolution in the ignorance is the middle. But the end is the liberation of the spirit into its true consciousness and an evolution in the knowledge. This is actually what we find to be the law and method of the process which has hitherto been followed and by all signs is likely to be followed in her future working by evolutionary nature. A first involutionary foundation in which originates all that has to evolve. An emergence and action of the involved powers in or upon that foundation in an ascending series, and a culminating emergence of the highest power of all as the agent of a supreme manifestation are the necessary stages of the journey of evolutionary nature. So far, so good. He's recapitulating here this picture of evolution based in matter, Matter itself is an evolute of the inconscience. In matter, life manifests. In living matter, mind manifests. But the journey is not complete until we acquire a complete identity and integration of that greater origin in ourselves as we are here. Changed, transformed, but without sacrificing or discarding the material sheath. It must become the glorious body of divinity revealed. An evolutionary process, he continues, must be, by the very terms of the problem to be solved, a development in some first established basic principle of being or substance, of something that that basic principle holds involved in itself or else admits from outside itself and modifies by the admission. For it must necessarily modify by its own law of nature all that enters into it and is not already part of its own nature. So this is the law by which matter will operate. It will admit a greater influence, but it has to subject itself to the nature of material principle, simply to come with its own law and veto and outlaw what previously was true for matter is not the way of evolution. We must accept the terms of the material foundation, changing it from within, but we accept it in principle. So it's a development, the process is a development within the material form. This must be so, even if it is a creative evolution, reference to Bergson, in the sense of manifesting always new powers of existence that are not native to the first foundation, but introduced into it, accepted into an original substance. So if the powers of matter don't have within them these greater possibilities of evolution, they must come in from above or from outside, still they have to be accepted according to the formula of matter. If, on the contrary, there is already there an involution, present in the first foundation, but not yet manifested or not yet organized, the new principle or power of existence that has to be evolved, then, when it appears, it will still have to accept modification by the nature and law of the basic substance. But also, it will modify that substance by its own power, its own law of nature. So, yes, still we assume matter is the primary principle, and its laws have to be operative and not tossed aside as the basis of evolution. But inside matter, inherent in matter, are other powers of existence which can emerge, not simply be imposed from above. They are here already. But even though they are here, they still have to accord themselves with the laws of matter. He continues, and we get more directly to his view here. If, further, it is aided by a descent of its own principle, already established in its own full force above the field of evolution and pressing down into that field to possess it, then the new power may even establish itself as a dominant element and considerably or radically change the consciousness and action of the world in which it emerges or into which it enters. So it's inside, it's also above. So life is within, but life in a sense is stirred by a striking, an impulsion coming from the realm of prana above it, stirring matter in stirring the life force inside matter to come into wakefulness. Same thing is true with the power of mind. Mind leans its influence into living matter at a point where mind in life can begin to stir and receive. And each of these, life and mind, can make something of a change in the material basis, but it is not the utter transformation which would be possible if the greater consciousness of the supramental light were to manifest. Supermind also is implied as presence in matter, is that which makes life live, is that which makes mind cognizant. The supramental is already present, but it is the pressure from above as well as from within that allows it to gather force and overcome and rewrite, in a sense, the laws of nature without violating them. This is the nature of the game to be played. It's subtle and it's lengthy, but it's worth playing. But its force, he says, to modify or change or to revolutionize the law and working of the original substance chosen as the evolutionary matrix will depend upon its own essential potency. It is not likely that it will be able to bring about an entire transformation if it is not itself the original principle of existence, if it is only derivative, an instrumental power, and not the first puissance or power. So this is an interesting point to which he will return, that the originating power, Satchit Ananda, organizing itself, expressing itself as a supramental consciousness, can alone change the matrix, the evolutionary matrix. Mind and life can influence, but cannot ultimately transform. The creative power of the Supreme alone can do that, and that is what the supramental consciousness is on its heights. So if the supramental were to descend, awakening the, in a sense, the sleeping supramental from within our material nature, then that nexus where they meet would be the beginning point of the ultimate transformation, which would, in a sense, justify the cosmos. The original principle of existence would emerge here. Innate, it is here. Spread broadly, but not evident. To make it evident, to make its powers directly relevant, to reveal them, requires the descent of that original principle here. So, we continue. Here, the evolution takes place in a material universe. The foundation, the original substance, the first established all-conditioning status of things is matter. Mind and life are evolved in matter, but they are limited and modified in their action by the obligation to use its substance for their instrumentation and by their subjection to the law of material nature, even while they modify what they undergo and use. For they do transform its substance, first into living substance, and then into conscious substance. They succeed in changing its inertia, immobility, and inconscience into a movement of consciousness, feeling, and life, but they do not succeed in transforming it altogether. They cannot make it altogether alive or altogether conscious. Life nature evolving is bound to death. Mind evolving is materialized as well as vitalized. It finds itself rooted in inconscience, limited by ignorance. It is moved and by uncontrolled life forces which drive and use it. It is mechanized by the physical forces on which it has to depend for its own self-expression. This is a sign that neither mind nor life is the original creative power. They, like matter, are intermediaries, successive and serried instruments of the evolutionary process. If a material energy is not that original power, then we must seek for it in something above mind or life. There must be a deeper occult reality which has yet to disclose itself in nature. So the fact that neither life nor mind can first immortalize itself in matter, or second bring itself to complete knowledge in living matter, are signs that these are not the powers of the originating spirit above. They are instruments, intermediary steps, which can influence and prepare, stage us towards the full and complete manifestation, but not themselves carry us there. An original creative or evolutionary power there must be, but although matter is the first substance, the original and ultimate power is not an inconscient material energy. For then, life and consciousness would be absent, since inconscience cannot evolve consciousness, nor an inanimate force evolve life. There must be, therefore, since mind and life also are not that, a secret consciousness greater than life consciousness or mind consciousness, an energy more essential than the material energy. Since it is greater than mind, it must be a supramental consciousness force. Since it is a power of essential substance other than matter, it must be the power of that which is the supreme essence and substance of all things, a power of the spirit. So here he's brought in all Satchit-Ananda. The supramental must express that Chit-Shakti. And all things must be formations of the original principle of being, Sat. There is a creative energy of mind and a creative life force, but they are instrumental and partial, not original and decisive. Mind and life do indeed modify the material substance they inhabit and its energies, and are not merely determined by them, but the extent and way of this mutual modification and determination are fixed by the inhabitant and all-containing spirit through a secret indwelling light and force of supermind, an occult gnosis, an invisible self-knowledge and all knowledge. So here he states it outright. There is immanent within nature, the presence, the power, the light, the force of the supramental consciousness. It is, in a sense, an extension, in terms of manifestation, of the essential Chit Shakti, based upon true, pure being. It is occult. The word means hidden. It is Gnostic. Gnosis means a real, a greater knowledge, not the common knowledge, the external apparent knowledge of the ratiocinate of mind, but a penetrating knowledge that knows by identity, and that as it knows can also act and enforce. It is the extension of knowledge will. It is a profound self-knowledge. It is lit up by the light of its own self, and its knowledge has no border. because it comes from that original infinite consciousness. Distinctions and differentiations are not to it divisions. There are no walls to that consciousness. If there is to be an entire transformation, he writes, it can only be by the full emergence of the law of the spirit. Its power of supermind or gnosis must have entered into matter, and it must evolve in matter. It must change the mental into the supramental being, make the inconscient in us conscious, spiritualize our material substance, erect its law of Gnostic consciousness in our whole evolutionary being and nature. This must be the culminating emergence, or at least that stage in the emergence, which first decisively changes the nature of the evolution by transforming its action of ignorance and its basis of inconscience. So, when supermind emerges, as it must, then transformation can occur. The rest is modification, let us say, but the real transformation comes when the supramental shines through matter, life, and mind. And note the conversion of the opposites. We move from darkness to light. We move from death to immortality. We move from insentience to delight. It accords great harmony. And this harmony is founded upon the oneness of its being and consciousness, on the sameness of its consciousness and its power. This movement of evolution, of a progressive self-manifestation of the spirit in a material universe, has to make its account at every step with the fact of the involution of consciousness and force in the form and activity of material substance. So here we have these two realities, an evolution trying to emerge within the fact, the pre-established fact of an involution of consciousness. For it proceeds by an awakening of the involved consciousness and force, and its ascent from principle to principle, from grade to grade, from power to power of the secret spirit. But this is not a free transference to a higher status. We can't convey ourselves liberally from one condition to the other. He's going to tell us that we have to earn it. The law of action, the force of action of each grade or power in its emergence, is determined not by its own free, full and pure law of nature or vim of energy, but partly by the material organization provided for it, and partly by its own status, achieved degree, accomplished fact of consciousness, which it has been able to impose upon matter. Its effectivity is in some sort made up of a balance between the actual extent of this evolutionary emergence and the countervailing extent to which the emergent power is still enveloped, penetrated, diminished by the domination and continuing grip of the inconscience. So you can see there's this struggle for supremacy. Is the power of life, is the power of mind awake enough, energetic enough to overcome the thraldom of the form in which it sits and struggles to emerge? And it depends, doesn't it? All depends upon the more or less involved or more or less evolved condition of consciousness, quite involved in inconscient matter, hesitating on the verge between involution and conscious evolution in the first or non-animal forms of life and matter, consciously evolving, but greatly limited and hampered in mind housed in a living body, destined to be fully evolved by the awakening of the supermind in the embodied mental being and nature. So there's a chalking out of the various grades of ascent. To each grade in this series, achieved by the evolving consciousness, belongs its appropriate class of existences. One by one, there appear material forms and forces, vegetable life, animals and half-animal man, developed human beings, imperfectly evolved or more evolved spiritual beings. But because of the continuity of the evolutionary process, there is no rigid separation between them. Each new advance or formation takes up what was before. The animal takes up into himself living and inanimate matter. Man takes up both along with the animal existence. There are furrows left by the transitional process or separating demarcations settled by the fixed habit of nature. But these distinguish one series from another, serve perhaps to prevent a fall back of what has been evolved. They do not cancel or cut the continuity of the evolution. So you can imagine a plow that's moving forward. As it cuts through the earth, a furrow is made. There's a forward direction, and the furrow divides one side from another side. It's a defining distinction, but not an absolute separation. The continuity continues. The evolving consciousness passes from one grade to another, or from one series of steps to another, either by an imperceptible process or by some bound or crisis, or perhaps by an intervention from above, some descent or ensouling or influence from higher planes of nature. Again, this hints at his own position. So it can be a natural process, which seems to be interminable and maybe eonic to get to a point, or there can be a sudden leap forward. Or a crisis may occur. And in Ilya Prigozhin's idea, you know, a sudden transformation and inner sophistication occurs. Crisis, by the way, from the Greek, means turning point. So it's that point in which something new can develop. In medicine, it's the point at which the patient recovers and lives, or the patient withers and dies. So either slowly or a sudden bound or a crisis that nature engineers to call forth this, or there can be an intervention leaning in from above. Something comes down to strike wakefulness into us, to stir hidden potentialities. He continues, but by whatever means, the consciousness secretly indwelling in matter, the occult inhabitant, is able thus to make its way upward from the lower to the higher gradations, taking up what it was into what it is and preparing to take up both into what it will be. So from the past to the present to the future, and that occult, that hidden inhabitant, is like that power of Agni in us, the Godhead that Sri Aurobindo spoke to in his citation from the Veda. cognate with our soul, is waiting to move from stage to stage, from level to level, from the past to the present, consolidating the present, and then moving to the future. This is our ascent from darkness to light. Thus, having first laid down a basis of material being, material forms, forces, existences, in which it seems to be lying inconscient, though in reality, as we know now, always subconsciously at work, it is able to manifest life and living beings, to manifest mind and mental beings in a material world, and must, therefore, be able to manifest there supermind also, and supermental beings. Thus has come about the present status of the evolution of which man is the now apparent culmination, but not the real ultimate summit. For he is himself a transitional being and stands at the turning point of the whole movement. So the human is critically important in a way that we are at the crux of things. A transitional being, though, and Sri Aurobindo has several unpublished articles left behind for us to read in which he's used this phrase, a transitional being, as the title of an article. A turning point, again, the Greek word would be crisis. Evolution, being thus continuous, must have, at any given moment, a past with its fundamental results still in evidence, a present in which the results it is laboring over are in process of becoming, a future in which still unevolved powers and forms of being must appear till there is the full and perfect manifestation. The past has been the history of a slow and difficult subconscious working with effects on the surface. It has been an unconscious evolution. The present is a middle stage, an uncertain spiral in which the human intelligence is used by the secret evolutionary force of being and participates in its action without being fully taken into confidence. It is an evolution slowly becoming conscious of itself. The future must be a more and more conscious evolution of the spiritual being until it is fully delivered into a self-aware action by the emergent Gnostic principle. This is a good place to put a bookmark, if you use them. We'll continue with it next week. I think we'll probably spend 4 sessions on this chapter. So, there are many sections in Savitri which would answer or echo what Sri Aurobindo has written here in The Life Divine. And I'm still trying not to repeat any of the passages that we've read in earlier sessions. It is becoming difficult. This is in Book 2, The Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, and Canto 5, The Godheads of the Little Life. I pick it up in the middle. The eternal entity prepares within its matter of divine felicity, its reign of heavenly phenomenon. Even in our skeptic mind of ignorance, A foresight comes of some immense release. Our will lifts towards it slow and shaping hands. Each part in us desires its absolute. Our thoughts covet the everlasting light. Our strength derives from an omnipotent force. And since from a veiled God joy the worlds were made, and since eternal beauty asks for form, even here where all is made of being's dust, our hearts are captured by ensnaring shapes. Our very senses blindly seek for bliss. Our error crucifies reality to force its birth and divine body here, compelling, incarnate in a human form, and breathing in limbs that one can touch and clasp, its knowledge to rescue an ancient ignorance, its savior light, the inconscient universe. And when that greater self comes sea-like down to fill this image of our transience, all shall be captured by delight, transformed. In waves of undreamed ecstasy shall roll our mind and life and sense and laugh in a light other than this hard, limited human day. The body's tissues thrill, apotheosized. Its cells sustain bright metamorphosis. This little being of time, this shadow soul, this living dwarf figurehead of darkened spirit, out of its traffic in petty dreams shall rise. Its shape of person and its ego face, divested of this mortal travesty, like a clay troll kneaded into a god, new made in the image of the eternal guest, it shall be caught to the breast of a white force, and flaming with a paradisal touch in a rose fire of sweet spiritual grace, in the red passion of its infinite change, quiver, awake, and shudder with ecstasy. As if reversing a deformation's spell, released from the black magic of the night, renouncing servitude to the dim abyss, it shall learn at last who lived within unseen, and seized with marvel in the adoring heart, to the enthroned child Godhead kneel aware, trembling with beauty and delight and love. But first, the spirit's ascent we must achieve, out of the chasm from which our nature rose. The soul must soar sovereign above the form, and climb to summits beyond mind's half-sleep. Our hearts, we must inform with heavenly strength, surprise the animal with the occult God. Then kindling the gold tongue of sacrifice, calling the powers of a bright hemisphere, we shall shed the discredit of our mortal state, make the abysm a road for heaven's descent, acquaint our depths with the supernal ray, and cleave the darkness with the mystic fire. Back to Agni, at the core of your own heart, the psychic spark. Namaste, Jai Ma.